That's right, we're not just a bunch of plant folk in adventuring. We are adventure buds, the other definition. My name is Riley.
And I am Aubrey, and I was the one who actually had, a party member with us who was literally an adventuring plant folk.
Oh!
I didn't play as one, but it was in this game that we're doing, which is one that we've been planning on doing basically since the beginning of this, but originally we were going to do it a lot later.
Well, you know what? That's good inspiration. Hey, go play that plant person you wanted to play. Because we are here at Adventure Buds. Go play what you want. Anyway. Hey, Aubrey, what do you want to play? You want to play a game? You want to play a game? What do you have in store?
Oh, well, let's see. I'm taking a look at this whole 13th Age thing, but I've got all of these books sitting over here for this lovely thing that I have a lot of playtime with, and I know that you do too. A little thing by the name of Fellowship.
What?
Yeah.
Fellowship? What's that? I say. Wow, I cannot fucking act, apparently.
So, which is surprising considering, but yes,
Give me too much credit.
Fellowship is, for those of you who maybe haven't run into it before, a game about playing as a group of adventurers that, in most cases, are trying to save the world. But given the new edition, you actually have a few other options, but usually you have save the world, stop the world from being unsaved because it's already been taken over by the evil empire, or explore around and right wrongs as you find them, and if you don't right the wrongs, you're probably going to make a lot of people very angry at you. So that one's more of a wandering nomads type architecture, and those are respectively dealing with the Overlord, which is what the GM type player is playing as in the first case, where you're trying to save the world, or the Empire, which is the second case, or the Horizon, which is the third case, where you have a bunch of locations that you go to instead of having one overarching bad thing. And with the new addition, you actually have the option of choosing which of these you want to go with, and there's examples given in each of the different books. Oh, but that's not actually out yet. There's still a Kickstarter going.
Wow, really? A Kickstarter? Huh.
Yep.
It's like we're kind of helping with that Kickstarter.
Speaking of, with the Horizon case, the example setting that's given is Invels, which would also be known by Inverse World, which is, I believe, the first book that Jacob Randolph ever wrote for this sort of thing and released as a separate supplement as opposed to just what originally was a Dungeon World
Oh.
playbooks. That
Yes,
was
you
where it
are.
started, and
Yes.
then Inverse World was a reskinning, basically, to a new space. And we have a reprisal of that, which is happening with the second book in the Kickstarter, which I imagine you'll have a link going to, as well as to, because of, what that is, Inverse Fellowship, the reason why we're not going to be doing those playbooks today, which is, y'all could already hear both of us, as well as three other wonderful people, presenting that for you.
I mean, you could just call them dorks. We're probably both gonna call them dorks. We're all dorks!
I mean,
Come
yes, we're
on.
all dorks. They're also, friends of ours, so.
That's why we call them dorks, because they are very lovely friends of ours. Also, they are very familiar with 6 Feet Under.
Which is where the example bonus feat, as it is called, is taking place. And I believe the last part of that one shot should be released pretty soon.
Yeah, hopefully whenever I get it edited.
Should be
Whenever
real
I
close
get
now.
it I will get it up as soon as I can. Hopefully by the time you listen to this, at least the final episode that will be released. So, but anyway, yeah.
That is where the weirder books that are quite wonderful are expounded on. We had five show up there, which is pretty good coverage for a book that has 7 books. So, check it out. Take a look. See what kind of weird, wonderful stuff you aren't going to run into as much in normal fellowship you might like from over there. Meantime, we're going to cover the stuff from the first book, which is the core playbooks when dealing with creation here, so that we don't run over the same ground twice.
Yeah, so that was actually something you want to bring up, was that none of us chose any of the second edition core playbooks
when we recorded. In the recording that we did, we were like, well, this is taking place in Invels, and you want us to focus on Inverse Fellowship, so let's just do it full out. So every last one of the 5 of us picked something that was from the Inverse Fellowship book, which meant that we had the 2 that are very specifically from Invels between us two, which you picked the Lantern and I picked the Rain. So yep. you got to have weird laser powers, and I got to be a weird water person that was shaped like a rabbit.
We definitely made our presence known.
And the rest also got to shine in wonderful ways, but they're less Invels-focused and more Invels-compatible playbooks, let's just say.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Angel was part of the original. In fact, I have the folder for this.
I think the Angel was something similar to one that existed there, but isn't...
You might be right, because I'm looking at it right now. I see the Artificer, Channeler, Winter Mage. I don't see anything in this. This was all... I have a playbook full of all the books that Gnome wrote.
The Angel is weird enough and flexible enough to fit anywhere, and while the Lantern and the Rain are specifically Invels sourced, that doesn't mean they don't fit elsewhere. You can have your weird creature made out of water or slime however the heck you want, and now you have the Rain, and you can make that work. Or you can have your person who has access to a piece of some form of light that's capable of doing all kinds of weird, like, Swiss Army knife type things, and is also technically alive, and possibly a tiny spark from the creation of the world, and that works fine. You can have that in any game. Part of what I love about it is because, yes, these are weird, but they're not stuck in the setting, it's just that the setting fits them so well that it's fun to play with, and ordinarily, Fellowship is about creating your own setting between all the different characters that you have. And while the original set of playbooks is very what you think of when you hear the name Fellowship in any nerd circle, you're going to hear some similar names. They also have a ton of flexibility without having to be completely out there. So even the first book is real cool. I'm going to briefly cover the one that we're probably not going to be making a character of today, because it is weird. Ordinarily, you have playbooks that you do your thing, you have your niche that you carve out of that particular character archetype, because you don't just have one when you're dealing with a playbook. There's usually at least 2 major forks that you can go down, a bunch of little other things you can do. And we'll get to that when we're creating these. But then you have the destinies that happen after you hit level 5, and those let you go completely off the wall and do weird stuff. Like, the dwarf has a bunch of options that you can take. You could potentially create a very warlike dwarf that could go down the warlord very easily. Or you could take the other path, and since, you know, you've got a dwarf, you have the option to go straight down the line of the dwarf to become more dwarfy than your ordinary dwarf. So the warlord gets stuff that's focused on dealing with large armies and being practically, you know, invincible to anything that isn't an army, essentially, in terms of battle. Whereas the dwarf has the ability to do stuff like, oh, say, take your tunnel making ability and just go, I can tunnel through anything. The sky, dreams, whatever. But Harbinger used to be a normal playbook, Not anymore. Not in second edition. There was an option in first edition for the powerful Harbinger, and now that's the only one that's there.
Also, don't ask me for spoilers about Harbinger in our own campaign to Winter's End.
Yep. No,
don't do it.
There's a bunch that's been recorded, and we're not allowed to talk about it yet. And I don't know 99% of it, so I can say whatever I want, because I would be just pulling it out of my...
And all I'm going to say is, hey, I got a red panda! Yay!
Yep. But yeah, with powerful books, instead of having a handful of options to deal with, like the Halfling, for instance, which, spoilers, that's what I'm making today, they have a set of just 7 advancement options that they start off with. And you start the game at level 1, and each time you advance, you increase your level by 1, and once you've hit level 5, so 4 advances out of the set of 7, you have the option to take a destiny. And once you do that, that gives you more options.
I want to interrupt there. That was actually a point brought up in our own To Winter's End campaigns that apparently no one wanted that to be level 6. It's just that you become eligible after taking your level 5.
Yes. Which means you have to have already taken 4, and then your 5th advance would be when you can do destinies.
No, it isn't that. It's... you have to be level 5. Take an advance at level 5, and then at level 6 you get your destiny and the move that comes from that.
Okay. That's not what's on the page. What is on the page is you begin the game at level 1.
I will say, if you're going at level, you know, like, that's just how we went, but, you know, if your group is going with that level, that's fine. That's fine. It's fine. This is something we went with when Gnome brought that up. So,
well, Gnome's had a chance to do edits on this, and the edits that are given are, you begin the game at level 1, you go through 4 advances, you're at level 5, your next advance is when you would be eligible for doing destinies.
Also, at the time of recording, we kind of did not. Well, I guess release is a bit different. Actually, no, wait. At the time of recording, our next episode that will release will reveal the first destiny.
Oh, yes, in To Winter's End. So, anyway, that is how it is on the sheet. So, your 5th advance, which would be at level 6, which I think lines up completely with what you're saying, would be when you are eligible for destinies, which is, that's why I said the way that I did. Like,
destinies,
that's where the editing happened. So they happen at level 6 or higher, because you don't level up until you have already... oh, wait, maybe they freaking... whatever. I interpret it as being you have to be at level 5 and then you get your advance to level 6 and destiny. And anyway, so Harbinger, let me just count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, they have 12 advancement options. And the reason they have 12 advancement options is because this is the powerful Harbinger, which means they don't get a destiny option. Their flat out is not an option on this list for you have changed, choose a destiny that you meet the requirements for, because they already have their destiny locked. And it is a weird one, because instead of getting a single destiny, they have the option to choose from 3 of them. So they get 3 of these, I guess from a D&D perspective, you would call them prestige classes, but honestly, I like them a lot better than prestige classes. Because they're so much easier to make flow, and they're so wonderfully thematic without requiring you to jump through hoops. The ones like the Ur-Dwarf, it used to be the Ur-Dwarf was only available to the Dwarf, but what they did afterward was make it so that you could get the Fellowship from the Dwarves, or a Dwarven settlement, and that gives you access to the Ur-Dwarf as an option. There's also one for the various other peoples, like the Elven Elite, which I'm sure you'll get to in a little bit.
You know what? Here's the thing. If you're going to be a tall, lanky elf and you're called an Ur Dwarf, then that is so fucking cool!
You could do that. There's nothing keeping you from do that.
Exactly!
On the other hand, you can also take the route of whichever direction you're going. If you end up with the Elven Elite, you become what most elves thought impossible, a better elf. That is the actual text.
Elves are kind of dicks.
I still love it. And yeah, that's the thing with elves is they tend to be extremely haughty and very full of themselves and full of something that you would ordinarily consider to be hubris, except somehow fate does not let them fail in most cases. Except when it does.
Yeah.
But yeah, so with the powerful Harbinger being the standard now, you have the powerful playbook as a concept, and powerful playbooks always have this thing of you don't get a destiny, instead you get a choice of basically a la carte from a small set of destinies that fit that particular thing very well. Harbingers are End of Days, Oracle, and Witch, which even from the name of them, you can tell they sound very much like something that makes sense for something called Harbinger. And if you're wondering what archetype would Harbinger possibly be connected to, wizards. They're extremely wizardy. They even have an ability that makes things explode.
I do want to say firsthand, though, that there was a prototype. Well, I don't want to say prototype. There is a powerful Harbinger from first edition that did classify the Harbinger as, you know, powerful, and the only Destiny playbook they got was Witch, but it still got, like, you could choose to get a Witch move before, you know, your usual Destiny move.
Yep, which is a big thing that turns up here. There's no level limits on you getting those abilities, which can be hideously powerful if played correctly. And of course, you have the option of taking a custom move, not just from any other ordinary, like, you can not just say, please share a move with me to your friends, which is a big thing that I love about Fellowship in general, is you can it encourages teamwork even in character building, because you can literally have a move that another person has that they teach you. And it's one of the advances you can take is to teach someone else a move instead of becoming more powerful yourself. And everybody levels at the same rate. There's none of this fighting for experience points thing. It's you pick a level, and the GM picks a level, and they pick two different people, and they have to pick ones that aren't already at the highest level of the entire team, unless everybody's at the same level.
In fact, the courtesy is you choose the lowest level person, so one of the things that's coming up in the next Fellowship Edition is allowing people to start over at level one with a different playbook.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of a new beginning. No one talked about this in extent on Twitter, so that's spoilers.
Yep, and it's going to be a solid part of second edition as well, and my goodness, there's a huge amount of changes that are happening if you can't tell. So yes, this is a big thing, and I'm really glad that the Kickstarter is doing as well as it is so far, but it can get bigger. You can get all of the new stuff that people are going to be helping design in an entire extra book. And that will make things explode even further. But yeah, biggest thing, I guess, is like little touches of the moves, especially with regards to one specific thing. Because everything, you have 5 stats. These stats have abilities attached to them similar to Apocalypse World, so if you're familiar with the concept of the modifiers that get applied in Dungeon World, just imagine instead of having the 3 to 18 thing, you just have the modifiers, and they can be anywhere from -1 all the way up to +3, and that's how Apocalypse World stuff normally works. We still have that here. You get a spread of stuff from -1 to +2, but you have 5 stats to select from, each of which has specific things that it does. And instead of taking harm or taking HP damage, you instead damage a stat whenever you take damage. And when a stat is damaged, you roll in despair, which means that you would roll 3 dice and take the result of the 2 lowest. Whereas if you have hope, which you can get from a bunch of things, mostly from having someone else in the Fellowship helping you out in some way. Even if that way seems rather contradictory, it can still work.
You know, I know you're referring to our last Inverse Fellowship.
We can't say what happened yet. Remember, it's not released.
Now, TM. Wait, is that what we say to save it from spoilers? No, wait. Well, no, whatever.
I don't know what you were just doing.
I was saying TM, like trademark.
That is not what you do. But yes, but when you have hope, you roll the 3 dice, and then you take the results of the 2 highest. And you can only ever have a hope or a despair. It doesn't matter how many sources you have coming in. If you have one or the other, you're fine, and you get the results of the 3 dice that I just described. If you have both, they cancel each other out, and you just roll 2d6.
I mean, if you have despair and you have somehow managed to get hope, then that's still good.
Yes, that cancels out and gives you the 2d6. But the point is, you can't go, and I get hope from this thing over here too, and therefore, no.
And you get hope.
No, it's always just the 2d6, and part of the reason for this is to make things move quickly so that you don't end up in modifier hell. And it works really nicely.
Yes.
So, oh my goodness, we're scattershot. But
no, we're not. We're fine. But I think this is now the perfect time to introduce our characters.
Well, the only reason why I was going through all that nonsense just now was because of the concept of threat to the world, which is so important to this nonsense.
Okay, that's the last thing we'll do, and then we'll talk about our characters. All right. Hey, hon, so what's a threat to the world?
When you have, like, a general of the Overlord, or some really powerful thing that you run into in one of the locations you go to as the Horizon, being the GM character, you get very powerful things that are so difficult to deal with that you have to sacrifice something to affect them in any way in order to make a move against them, including defending yourself against harm from them in some cases. You have to pay a price. And what that means is you have to use up a use of your gear, or you have to take damage of some sort, or there's a few other options that some characters get. Like, the orc always has the ability to just create weapons by breaking something and twisting it into a weapon. And you can always break a weapon as a price for this purpose. But you have to do that in order to affect them, which you don't normally have to do for just everyday things. In order to just try to talk some sense into someone, you don't normally have to give something up or damage yourself. Threats to the world, you do. For the Overlord is always a threat to the world. The Harbinger has the option to choose to become a threat to the world, and thereby not have to deal with that, because threats can threaten other threats without paying that price. But it has other repercussions besides, as you might imagine.
I think there's the subtle, untold repercussion that when you become a threat to the world, other people will probably see you as that and are probably afraid of you. That is a wonderful storytelling thing, though. So, you know what? Don't be afraid.
From a storytelling perspective, you can, decide you don't like that wall over there and just waltz through it. But on the other hand, people are not going to be happy with you because you just did that.
Also, there is another destiny related to becoming a very threatening threat to the world. What was that? Ascended.
Oh, there's
one?
A few of them.
Well, yeah, there's a few ones. But Ascended, I think it was. Was that what it's called?
Ascended definitely has that. End of Days definitely has that. Ascended is where you decide that these places of power that the Overworld loves to try to take over to further their ends, you decide to just go, okay, we got one of these, it's mine now, and I'm attuning to it, and then you become sort of a mini-Overlord of your own right.
It's basically a destiny about trading your own humanity for power.
Yep.
It's a very, very good destiny. Please do not be discouraged because it seems like an evil playbook. A lot of this is just it's still about, you know, role playing and stuff, and your character could definitely fall into this and like just write your own destiny. I don't mean destiny as in play, but I mean how you want your character to end.
Yeah, and with the Ascended, the thing is, like, it can be kind of a spooky concept, and that's good, because you're writing a story, and you want to have some of that kind of tumult occur. Also, there's the fact that when you become the Ascended, you get to write your own stat that is a thing that is true about you whenever it is active. And it can be damaged like your ordinary stats, but unlike those stats where it's just like it rolls in despair, as long as that thing is undamaged, it's true about you. And it can be something way over the top. You take a look at the available Overlord stats and you can see it. Like, Overlords have the ability to just have a thing that lets them tear through any normal material as if it's paper. That's just a stat they have. It's a thing they can do. It's called Juggernaut. They have another one that makes them basically invincible to any normal form of harm, and another one that lets them be able to see anything in the world. Overlords are powerful. That's the starting point for the kind of nonsense you can get up to with Ascended once you hit level 6. Have fun.
Yeah. Overall, I think the best way to put it is that if you, like, don't be afraid of having a character go over the edge. Like, if you're having fun with a character and you like the idea of them becoming potentially bad, like, well, not bad, but they do bad things.
Having temptation.
Yes, exactly. Like, I guess the best way to put this is that it's a matter of comfort, but if you're comfortable with the idea of your character being absurdly powerful and the world actually becomes afraid of them, but as long as you're fine with that, definitely look into that playbook. It is amazing.
And that's only one of many options, and we don't have time to get through all of them, but we do have time to decide which of us is going to be showing our character first.
I was about to segue into that. Hey, Aubrey, what are you making? Or do you want me to go first?
Seems we can't decide. Okay, heads or tails?
I mean, I was going to go first if you don't want to, so...
Go first.
Wait, did you actually flip a coin?
I flipped something that could count as a coin.
Okay. So, actually, I think we're making some good playbooks for considering, especially the books that get brought up a lot in our, especially our campaigns.
Yep. These are ones that typically get avoided and ways of playing existing ones that typically get ignored.
I mean, in the case of To Winter's End, it was just that we're playing a group of people that are not liked by the world. So the idea of playing a hero to the world is a little less, you know. But then again, you know, we have the dragon and the halfling. But in any case, I am going to be playing the elf, because why the hell not? I'm playing Shuroken. And I am playing the Wood Elf for my What is an Elf? Your people are one with the forest and trees. When traveling through woodlands, you and your allies cannot be followed by your enemies, and when you use the camouflage spell, you may hide any number of allies with you.
Yeah, that's the thing with the elves, is they have magic, and it is magic that is effect-wise, as opposed to blowing things up-wise. But you'll get to that when you get to that.
Yeah, I want to go for the stats first. So, the elves start with a +2 in grace. With my character, I am starting with also a +2 in blood. A fighty elf. A +1 in courage, a 0 in sense, and a -1 in wisdom. It's not very elf-like traditionally, which is why I love this.
Yep.
So let's go over the core moves, Elder Arts.
Can I hold you for a second?
Yes, please do.
Agenda. Choose one.
Oh, you're right. See, hon, this is why you're the perfect foil to me. I do. I actually did have this plan too. I am taking elven superiority. It is your duty to protect the lesser creatures.
Oh dear.
It is a bit of an ego, but it is certainly a noble task nonetheless. So, let's go over the core moves real quick. The elves have Elder Arts, which is basically magic. If you fill your belly, you can remove a mark from a spell, which you usually mark when you cast it. Or if you recover, you just remove all the marks. So you have, you know, you have camouflage, which makes you invisible or undetectable. And like I said, with Wood Elf, I can also make others take that spell with me. There's keen senses. Ask a single question about your surroundings, and you'll get a truthful answer. There is sense magic. Immediately know what here is magical and where it is. And if there isn't, you don't mark the spell. And then, whisper on the wind. You can send a message to someone you have the bond with. They will hear it. And they can still reply, as long as it's up to 5 words.
Yep. That's nice, short, sweet reply.
It's a bit of a callback to Dungeons & Dragons, sort of. Yep. What's that spell?
Message, I think it was called.
Yeah, probably. I remember there was like a 10-word limit to it or something.
It's a lot messier than what we have here, basically. This is a lot simpler and easier to deal with. So, the thing with any of the magic stuff like this is you can share the move, like we mentioned earlier. But the thing is, if another person gets the Elder Arts option, they only get one spell from the list. And this is partly to keep people from dipping into magic and just getting this giant pile of very useful abilities essentially for free when perhaps they shouldn't.
Oh, we should also mention that that sharing core moves was changed from when the game first released.
Yeah, originally most core moves could not be shared at all.
I mean, no, that was what was changed too. Now it's more that you can share some of your core moves. So the elves do, it says in Elven Advancement, take a core or custom move from, oh wait, nope, that's not no. The one. Oh wait, yeah, that actually does. Nope, because other moves probably have this too. Take a core or custom from any basic playbook. So yes, yeah. Other books that have that kind of ability, you can take that.
Yeah, previously, I'm pretty sure, previously you could not do that, and now we can, and they've made it very careful and made it very clear. Some core moves, elves don't have them, but some core moves, you cannot share.
Yeah, if any move says you cannot share this move, yeah.
Yeah, there's one for the collector, for instance.
Yeah, anyway.
But yes, touch the world lightly, I believe, is your second core.
Yes, it is. You can safely walk on top of snow, across the thin tree branches, upon precarious ledges, or on top of hell weaponry.
And I know you're playing an elf, but my goodness.
Look. It's very rare that I get to be this dramatic without also shouting. God bless you, Spade Diamond, for at least letting me shout.
I was about to say, you're almost at the level of channeling an extremely,
God bless
graceful Spade Diamond.
That fucking loser, Spade Diamond. Oh, God. Anyway, yes. This spell just, you can run along, dangerous areas. Stuff that nobody else can run upon. It's very graceful. Hence your +2 in grace. Although you still need to roll getaway. But this is one of those role-playing abilities, and I love those abilities. They're just like, hey, this is just part of you. You're that good.
Yep, and it gives you an excuse to, when you roll getaway, decide that you're going to get away in a way that makes absolutely no sense for someone who weighs an ordinary amount and moves through normal space.
Yeah, and if I it might come up with when you finally realize what my character is. Let's go into customs. I took Let me scroll to what I have here. One of them is way with words. When you speak softly with someone who admires or fears you, you may roll grace instead of wisdom, which is especially useful for what I just did. And when you speak softly, you may also ask, what do you they desire most? Regardless of the result of your roll. This especially goes because second edition redid the speak softly and talk sense rules. Mm-hmm. So that on a 6-minus, you definitely get some kind of bad results. I mean,
yeah. Also, I know some I'd people... intended.
Go ahead.
I'd intended to mention, like, keen senses also fits into this because the keen senses spell, it doesn't just, oh, I get a single question that will immediately be truthful and it's helpful to me for anything in my environment. It's like, you have the ability when you're dealing with sense. You can roll sense in a given location in order to look around you and see what you see. And that used to be a basically free, let's look at stuff, and it was basically implied, okay, you can only roll this once in a given scene, because otherwise it would be ridiculous, or you would be wasting time. Now, there's an actual consequence for rolling, because if you get a 9-minus, you find out one of the answers the hard way. Keen Senses lets you just get an answer for free without rolling.
There are other moves that use this, so this makes it extremely useful in the other books as well. So,
yep, and with Speak Softly, the thing is, ordinarily, when you ask these questions, if you get a 9-minus, I think it's a 9-minus, it might be a 6-minus? Okay, one of the answers that you get is a lie. Or could be one.
Yep. Yeah, this is one of the biggest changes from second edition is that you do not get purely positive results because, like, even on a 6-minus, speaking softly could still get you one question answered truthfully. In this, you still get, it was changed so you still get, like, 2 questions, but you still have consequences.
Yeah, you always have 3 questions that you can ask. 9-minus, one of their answers is not helpful. 6-minus, one of their answers is false.
Oh, okay.
But not the not helpful one. I just looked up the actual copy that we have in advance.
We have... Wow, both of us have a second edition copy. How weird!
We covered why. Anyway.
Anyway.
So what's your second one that you picked besides Way with World, with Words?
I took Special Stardust because the flavor for this I am changing. This is a change to Elder Arts. Well, not a change so much as you just add it. Sleep tight. You put someone straight to sleep. It's a normal sleep, so when they are waking up, it's by anything that would wake a normal sleeping person. Okay. So, my character is... They're not so much magical as just able to press a special point on a person to cause the effect to happen. So if they want someone to sleep, they're going to put a special sleeper hold on someone. Maybe they want
to... Yes. Oh my god.
Riley. Yes, hon?
For anyone who hasn't figured out what the heck is going on, just take the name of the character that Riley just made, take the first and last names and swap them, and then stare in amazement. Maybe remind you all that her panda is named Yuria? That might give you a hint, too.
I'm kind of surprised it took you this long. This is the exact result I was hoping for. Yes! We done it!
You successfully created freaking Kenshiro. Congratulations.
I mean, it has an elf.
Yep. And it works. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I didn't do anything quite that fancy. Have you decided what you might pick up as your next ability, by the way?
I was thinking of taking something from Half-Elf, but unfortunately I would have to go through some of the other moves. That might be a little too much for this podcast, unfortunately, because...
I have a thing in mind for what my next would be, and it is actually on the halfling list, because...
I mean, this is from my perspective. If you had something, that's perfectly fine.
So yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and pull up my halfling, I guess.
You did that? I'm going to talk about the elven gear I took.
Oh, right. Right. I'm sorry, I got broken out because it's freaking Kenshiro, and Kenshiro does not need any gear, clearly. But go ahead.
Oh, dearie me. So, the elves start with bread, 4 uses of food, and they start with a ranged 3 ammo bow.
And it's elf made on top of that.
Yes, that's something that needs to be brought up more. I wish it was brought up more. So elf-made gear burns people that aren't elves or friend of elves when they touch it. Unless they take Star Elf, which case electrocutes them to unconsciousness. Which is so good. I love it.
Yep, that's one of the what is an elf abilities that you get. And it's associated with them being high-tech. On top of that.
Yeah. Oh,
but yeah, that causes them to pass out instead of taking damage. Elfmaid also makes the gear timeless. It does not age. That's purely a flavor thing, usually, but...
That is so super cool. Anyway, let's talk about my gear. So, I am taking light armor because, you know what? You gotta take a blow or two when you're that kind of a frontliner.
Yep, so that gives you one armor.
Yep, and
you can take damage to that instead of to one of your stats whenever you get hit.
Next up, I'm taking a friend. I am going to take a shadow, which is basically my friend who acts from the shadows.
It's your ninja.
Yeah, not so much a ninja, it's just someone who is able to gather information and give me that information so I can exploit weaknesses, basically. So that would also help with if I were to erase a bond that's their stat, basically. That would work, because the shadow has untraceable and right where you need me. So yes, that can work with working weakness. Nice. Next up, hunting companion. I am going to go. Oh, this is all so good. Another
companion.
Well, two of them are companions. I want to go with a wolf. That looks like fun. Wolves come with pack hunter and loyal. You know what? Yeah, I'm definitely going to go with that.
Nice.
And then finally, elves you meet will usually carry at least 2 of the items you choose from the list below. Choose a memento of your homeland. It has one use. So, an elfstone brooch connecting you to your homeland. You use the item to remove a mark from your elder's art, so you get 2 of your spells. A ring signifying your membership in a secret organization. You can use this item to identify another member. It just gains you another bond with that person. That's useful.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the faces of those who have wronged you etch into your mind. You can use this item to clear an enemy to be your nemesis, giving it a hope to all roles to finish them or overcome them until they are dead. Which is probably what I'll take.
That's the most Kenshiro-like one, yes.
It is very Kenshiro. And there's a little space. Record your nemesis' name here and cross them off as they die. It seems silly, but it's also a really good role-playing thing down the line when you recall the people you have down. Ah, oh, that was so fun. That's such a fun character. Hey, hon, what do you got in plan?
Nothing quite so familiar, I guess. So I decided to make a halfling named Litter Rhyme. The look I chose was she has twinkling eyes, luscious curls, sensible clothes, and rotund body, and out of the agendas, with the standard ones that we have of be brave, take risks, tell us of your people, improve the world around you, I added have fun. Everyone's so gloomy all the time. Make sure they lighten up a bit.
Yeah, you're traveling to catch Cheryl.
Mm-hmm. Gotta have someone to spice things up a little bit, and Kenshiro often had smaller folk following him around, although they were usually literal children.
Yeah. Oh no, I forgot
the other girl. That was during the first season.
I forgot the girl's name. Oh no, Lynn! That's it, Lynn.
Yep. But yes, you start with a +2 encourage automatically. So the other stats that I have are a +2 in grace, +1 in sense, +0 in blood. This is more of a talker and a fun haver, not a fighter. And a -1 in wisdom, so, well, we're having problems there, I suppose.
I mean...
Except, my what is a halfling choice I made out of the options I had, I was thinking originally, do I want a fightier type of character, or do I want one that is more talky? If I had taken the fightier type, I would have gone with determined survivors, which has this thing of your people have suffered many setbacks and tragedies and they have never stopped you yet. So as a result, you have the option when you get away or keep them busy. If you get a 6-, which is normally just you failed, you didn't do the thing, you can instead just swap to the other move and act as if you rolled a 7-9. Which means you can keep them busy instead of getting away, and you know that it's a temporary thing, but it's better than nothing. Or, if you were trying to keep them busy and it didn't work, you'll go, oh my, look at the time, and just run. So, I could have taken that, but I decided I'm not doing a fighty type at all, so I went with clever storytellers. Your people love to collect stories from afar, and they love to share. You know just how to get someone to tell you what you want to hear. When you speak softly over stories and games, you may take the 7-9 result without rolling. If you are also using Halfling Pipeleaf, take the 10+ result instead. When you speak softly and they lie to you, they must tell you which question they lied about. So if for some reason I decide I don't want to use Pipeleaf and I want to roll my ridiculously bad wisdom score, the lie doesn't hurt me as bad as it could. And most of the time, I don't have to roll at all. So we both have ways of mitigating our absolutely abysmal wisdom stat.
What did I roll for Coda? I think they had a pretty good wisdom.
Coda
right?
had a +2 wisdom. You actually had a bunch of options, and as I recall, you had a situation where you had a special ability that used wisdom as well, because lanterns have wisdom as their major +2.
Something I did not use at all.
You could have used that ability to tell that person who you were having trouble with and then point them in the right direction that was in their best interests, and you instead said, nope, heck with this, and you walked away.
I was getting tired of this person's bullshit, and I walked away to our angel so that we, I could solve something.
And then you had a wonderful adventure, and you learned important information that the rest of us could use.
I learned the true value of friendship from that. Oh.
It was very nice, and I look forward to the rest of people seeing what happened there. But the rest of Lydda's stuff. So the halflings' big thing is they're troublemakers, just in general. They're tiny, underestimated, and relatively unknown. They're always a tricksy sort that pops up where they least expect. And
tricksy hobbits.
You get the following core options. The first is a new move. The little folk uses courage. When you do something clever or sneaky when no one is looking, roll +courage. On a 7+, you do it and no one notices right away. On a 9-, everyone knows you did it and as soon as they notice what you did. This is very open-ended and very wonderful, and it lets you do all kinds of strange things. One of the halflings that I have played with in the past was literally an imp, and you can only imagine what kinds of trouble that one got into.
I can imagine just the open-endedness of that. So wonderful.
Yep, there's so much nasty stuff you can get up to. There's so many places you can get that you're not supposed to be, and so many buttons that you really shouldn't push, but you just have to.
And the consequences you can get into. Oh,
it's wonderful.
It just warms my heart.
Next ability, Sting Like a Bee. When you keep them busy by getting in close and getting to 7+, and for those not following, keep them busy is a courage-using move. You get to choose one of the following Sting Like a Bee options. You can only use it against beings that are larger than you. First option, you get them to chase you around and you both leave the scene. Second, you steal something small from them and they don't notice until they need it, or until you taunt them with it. Next option, you get them talking. Ask a question from the Speak Softly list for free. And finally, you think fast. Ask a question from the Look Closely list. Now, one of the options I could have chosen for the, what is a halfling, would have meant that I get two options instead of one when I do this. I chose instead to go with the one that lets me talk to people more easily, which also flows into my custom choices. So the first custom that I chose was a friendly face. You're small and easily trusted. So long as you show a friendly face, anyone not already actively hostile towards you will treat you as a friend, until proven otherwise. Believe it or not, this can sometimes include some of the Overlord's army.
Oh, I was going to say your face is very friendly as well. I was confused. Aww. I thought you were talking about yourself. Welcome back to Adventure Buds. We flirt with each other.
As nice as some of the other options are here, like I'm very happy with the name of the one called Who's the Tough Guy Now, Tough Guy. But that's a very fighty ability, and it would be much nicer if I had actual blood stat, which I don't. I have a +0. So trying to roll overcome with a +0 and get a 12+ is basically like doing a Hail Mary. It's not going to happen very often.
I'm open!
But also with the talky part of things, I decided to take the classic talk nonsense. When you talk sense by telling grandiose lies with a straight face, roll courage. Ordinarily, when you do talk sense, you get the option of rolling with grace if you're, you know, trying to trick them in some way or like move them in a direction that you want them to. But it's purely in terms of what you think they want, basically. Sense if you explain a plan to them, or wisdom if you're appealing to their emotions. This lets you just lie. This lets you just make shit up on the spot and tell them something like, these are not the droids you want ability, basically.
It's very useful.
And so, yeah. My courage stat is automatically very high, so having this option is very nice. When you talk sense and get a 10+, you also get the option to use a sting like a bee option, just straight up, for free. So, talk nonsense is very nice, and it's a very classic halfling move in this game. Now, if I were to take a level up next, the very next thing I would be picking is Bottomless Belly, another classic, which is when you fill your belly, you may use as much food as you like and heal an equal amount of damage. Anyone trying to compete with you can also use one extra food to heal an extra point of damage. So this is in addition to the bonus you get for sharing a meal, where one person basically gets free food.
Yeah, but they have to compete with you. Also, does this apply to the Overlord? I bet it does. But I'm sure the GM will not do that unless very, very openly invited to, which would be fantastic.
I mean, yeah, you'd have to actually have them right there. Usually you don't try to use this ability in that manner when you're right in the middle of battle. And hey, while we have repeatedly ended up getting friends from the Overlord's forces in games that I have played, and now it is literally a finish them option.
I'm just saying, if you have a situation where you go, hey, 1,000 miles of darkness, you want to fight me in a pie eating contest?
I challenge you to a pie duel.
Although, on the other hand, like, them healing damage would not be too much of a downside to the fact that you just challenged 1,000 miles of darkness to a pieing contest.
Roll to finish them.
Oh no! It's a blueberry pie!
If you roll with plus wisdom and you succeed, you automatically end up turning them around and they have a actual real bond with you that you can then recruit them with.
I'm just imagining the Overlord suddenly having a change of heart, staring at an apple pie, and then they just plummet face first into the pie and splat.
They just stop deciding that they're going to destroy the world and instead tell you about what they were actually doing, which is protecting you from the real Overlord, who is much worse.
And you know what?
Is going to level up very, very quickly because they're new.
You know what? This is one of the things with Fellowship they can do. This is a real possibility. You can have an Overlord like this.
As a matter of fact, both the games I have played thus far, we have always had an Overlord who is kind of strange and quirky, and we didn't understand why they were trying to take over the world or cause damage, and it turned out they weren't the real threat. There was something worse.
Not my Overlord, she killed my character twice, apparently.
Oh yeah, you're not going to be making friends with her.
You say this, but...
Aurorealis, most likely. You're probably going to be breaking her face.
You don't... We'll see how that goes, because...
You already took an ear off.
Just wait until... Two Winters End just continued again, so...
We did the thing again.
No, the thing again.
No, we've done the thing again, because I haven't gotten to gear.
We love doing the thing again.
So, you start with a trusty handheld weapon, which I have chosen a knife, and a halfling packed lunch, which food... two uses, and each use feeds three people. Yes, I told you, I haven't done gear yet.
I know. I fucked up and forgot about that as well. Okay, so.
You choose what you brought with you to keep your friends safe. These are mostly, like, defensive or more attack options. One of them is literally a slingshot. There's also poultices. I chose burglar's gear because having useful items is always nice, and that gives you two uses with the useful tag, which means, is this a thing that might be useful right now? Pull it out.
Zip!
Choose the companion you brought on your journey. Some of these are metaphorical companions, like you have what I've chose, which is halfling pipe leaf and some snacks. Halfling pipe leaf is a slow item, so you can't just whip it out in the middle of battle very easily. You have to actually go through the process of using it. And it has the drunk tag, which means you probably don't want to use this unless it has a side benefit, which I fortunately have one.
I mean...
You get two uses of that, and you get two uses of food from the snacks.
More food! Hooray!
Yep. And finally... Well, not finally. You have choose the luxury you couldn't let go, and I chose, even though you do have the option of getting even more food, like a lot of food, as one of the options here, I chose a bottle of elven wine, which it's another drunk item, but it has healing as one of its tags.
Also,
and you get two uses.
It isn't slow. It isn't slow yep. healing.
It's basically a potion that gets you drunk.
Yes. Also, we should explain, drunk was changed in the second edition. When you're drunk, your next roll will be rolled with despair. Meanwhile, when you get vigor, you get hope with your next roll. It does not matter what stat, unlike first edition.
Yep. In first edition, it only improved certain stats, and it has been massively simplified, and I like this change. It is a change for the better.
It makes a more dynamic change, and lets you just... It makes things happen.
Oh, there is an advantage to Halfling Pipe Leaf... that is present no matter what. It wasn't listed up there, it was listed further down. When you share your pipe leaf with another, using up one use, speak softly with them as if you rolled a 7-9. With my option, I get to use a 10+, but ordinarily it just gives you a 7-9. And the side element is, yes, you do get the drunk tag attached, and that does mean that you roll in despair on your next roll. A small price to pay. So, finally, we get the special option. Everybody gets one. What fell into your pocket on the way out the door? Now, you have a few options here. The first is a purse full of foreign coins, which means you get two uses of precious items as gear, which means they refresh An adventuring contract with all the terms and conditions in writing, one use, is another option, which you can use to win an argument with another player. I have had this show up in games and never get used. So, I'm going to be honest, it's kind of a silly option.
I mean, that's such a good option. To tell one of your other players, hey, shut up, I win.
It depends entirely on your group. And in some cases, with some groups, it can be very entertaining because, as I said, it is a silly option. If you have a silly enough group, this is a good thing to have. And finally, an address book filled with family friends. One use. You can use this item to find a friend in any town you go to. You have a bond with them. Write it now. I have chosen this one because it makes a lot of sense.
You have a lot of bonds that way.
But frankly, I can't think of anything that would make more sense than that for Lita.
You do get a lot of bonds this way. That's very nice. And I think we
get a lot of bonds, and you can also get a lot of companions from those bonds if you so choose.
I think we get a lot of bonds between our two characters, because even with Shuriken, we're making some good friends along the way.
Yep. And all you need to do to make a bond with a NPC ordinarily is to sit down with them and have a nice chat, and that's something that both of us are pretty good at in our own ways. So, that's all the options that I have taken for this. I could have picked one of many different halfling companions, and some of them are quite nice. For instance, you could have a chef along with you.
Oh yeah, that was something from the first playtest of Fellowship that was on 6 Feet Under, was that one of the options was getting a bunch of halfling companions.
The halfling chef is actually very powerful, and y'all should consider it if you want to, because the stats, every companion has at least one stat, and some have two. Most have two. The halfling chef has special ones. They have special ingredients as one, which, again, these tags... I think these tags work however the heck you want them to, because these are your companions.
They work however you want them to. That's the whole point. Yes.
But their second one is special, because they have food. They have two uses of food that come with them.
That is so good. I love it.
Yeah, your options at that point are... Like, I took the one that gives you food and also gives you pipe leaf, because I wanted to have pipe leaf. But you could easily take... Here's a helpful chef who has special ingredients, some of which could actually be combat ready, because it doesn't say if they're not. And also you have two uses of food. Here, have them. It's just... the sheer amount of flexibility that you have with some of this stuff is wonderful. So yeah, this is basically my favorite game right now. Like, I'm not kidding. Fellowship is a game that I've had a lot of good play with, I've had a lot of good sessions with, played two complete campaigns, and had a one-shot that is demonstrating that the second edition is going to be even better.
Yeah, I think people that know me know that I play and to Wench's End for 6 Feet Under, which is a group of four heroes that are adamant on saving the world, despite the fact that most of the world does not care for them. This is a very interesting premise because we do not have many bonds with people that join us, which is very interesting for a game called Fellowship, but yep. To me, it's a very strong demonstration of how the game can be played, even if you don't want to have bonds with people. And that just solidifies how amazing of a game this can be. Also, I guess we do have bonds eventually developing, like, well, you'll see eventually.
That's good. I remember actually pointing out to you when I was, you know, listening along to these episodes and poking at one point being like, so when do you actually get new companions? And then you had freaking Hunter show up. So that's wonderful. But Hunter also appeared as a fellowship with the Blood Tongue clan. So as a result, you know, you got around the fact that the Squire can't ordinarily recruit people with bonds. But Yeah, the thing is, both games that I have played have been with a GM who loves to generate a lot of wonderful NPCs, and some of them we just couldn't do without. And by the end of both of the games that I have played there, we ended up with a number of companions that is literally in the dozens. And during the end of the last campaign, one of those was literally an army of kobolds.
Oh god, you had so many companions!
It puts in stark contrast the options that you have, that we had tons of companions, and meanwhile the Two Winters End Fellowship, with their whole thing of being not well-liked by the rest of the populace, have very, very few.
I want to clarify, by the way, Hunter is a Triceratops, reskinned from the War Elephant, so I had Tuscan Screaming, and what else did I have? Oh, it was something armored. The armored carrier or something like that?
Mm-hmm. It's always good to do reskinning. I had, the dwarf that I played as was made out of stone. Their entire people were made out of various different types of minerals, except for gold, because gold couldn't be alive in that universe for metallurgical reasons. And had a drilling device that was one of the options that you have as a starting companion. It's a drill. It's a drill tank, basically. And I decided this was a thing that looked kind of like a metal slug tank, except that it unfolded into a mini amphitheater that had way too high of an amplification, such that when you hit, like, 4 on the knob out of 11, it was capable of shaking the foundations of buildings, and 7 shook rock apart. So instead of drilling, it would actually just use sonic force.
You and your fucking fellowship went up to 11.
Yes. I didn't even get to use that until the final confrontation.
And very then the appropriate.
Poor thing, and then the poor thing got blown apart by the Overlord.
Nah.
It was a beautiful way for that thing to go out.
A salute to your fallen comrade. So, as you can tell from our stories, fellowship is just filled to the brim with possibility.
It's beautiful right things now. You can do with it, and it's worth noting, in like 99% of cases, the Overlord does not have 100% say, or the GM in general does not have 100% say, on what the world is made of, because command lore is a normal ability, and it means that anything that pertains to your particular little section of the world, your people, whatever, you're going to be the one, as the player, who everybody turns to and goes, so what's going on here? What is this place? Get ready to write notes.
Oh, yeah. No. Like, the entire point of Fellowship is that it gives a lot of power to the players about commanding the world. And not just...
collective world building and collective storytelling.
Yeah.
Something I haven't really seen in any other game being pushed quite this hard.
Nope. And like, we didn't go into what we thought of our people at all, but like, that's just like part of our powers, that we can say what the elves want you, right? Yeah, a lot of our elves are in fact muscle-building people, or something like that. It's just all what the entire group wants to decide, and you have a chunk of it.
And of course you have bond formation that you can do after, which we... I think part of why we didn't get into bonds immediately is it's pretty similar to how things worked in Dungeon World, except they're usually less antagonistic as options. Right. A lot of them are about admiration or teaching each other things. And the other aspect of it is, well, for one thing, you're heavily encouraged to write your own bonds after a while. And you're mostly going to get them with NPCs. And we have 2 characters. And you're supposed to form 4 bonds. Ordinarily, your fellowship should be 4 or 5 players, not counting the Overlord as your 5th or 6th. And so it gets crowded, and you have to form a lot of bonds, unless you're playing a powerful archetype, in which case you have a very limited number.
Also, the thing with bonds, I guess I don't have much to say about bonds. It's just, well, yes, I do. Bonds you can roll with. If you roll a move that uses bonds, you roll with how many bonds you have with a character.
Yep. And ordinarily, this is a companion that you are rolling bonds with. The max you can roll is +3.
Well,
I said ordinarily.
Yeah.
The max you can roll is +3. The other thing that bonds do is they give you hope whenever you have some other member of the Fellowship that you have a bond with who is helping you with something.
I was going to say, actually, you are right, because when you roll with somebody, you actually roll with hope. That's a very useful move. Yep.
Which is honestly much more powerful than just rolling with bonds.
Yep, unless you're a squire.
Oh, the squire. The squire just gets to use bonds. The squire gets a max of 7 bonds on someone instead of 3. And you can just go, yeah, if I remember correctly.
No, the squire gets unlimited bonds.
Oh my goodness, it used to have a cap. What the hell happened?
It never did.
Oh.
Behold the bonds!
But yes, they have abilities that let you heal people, for instance, or do other interesting things by having those bonds get scrapped. But the thing is, you have so many of them that you can still benefit from that extremely strong attachment with someone else, and you can easily reform more bonds to make sure that you can continue doing stuff like miraculously healing them with the power of friendship.
Yes, let's talk about the fact that Yuria's strongest ability into Winter's End is that she can form bonds with people and they're unlimited, and she can use them for healing or to spend it as a precious or useful item. Because she's magical.
The Squire honestly has a lot of utility powers that are really powerful if you make proper use of them. And I think that might be the reason why the Squire has the most limited command lore power, which is you have command lore over companions and people who you have fellowship with, but you do not have command over an entire people. So you have basically command lore over the Fellowship and anybody directly connected to it, which is its own little sphere, which is quite nice.
In any case, I think that will do it for this episode of Venture Buds.
Yep.
I think we wrapped this up pretty well.
Before we continue gushing about this game for the next hour.
So,
could. I completely could.
Both of us could.
Just get together and start a game right now. Let's go.
Okay, I am rolling the Overlord. But yes, the Kickstarter for Fellowship 2. Well, second edition. Why did I call it 2? Probably because it sounds more dramatic for that reason. But yes, second edition Fellowship is on Kickstarter. At the moment of this recording, it's not even halfway through Kickstarter. And it's already funded like nearly 140%, I think.
Yeah, we are currently, they've gotten up to the more art tier, which is the second to last one that is marked. And they are approximately $4,000 and a little bit of change away from getting book 4, A Generous Fellowship, which I mentioned sort of in passing earlier.
This is a good book.
Which is the big expansion that will have a bunch of backer-funded bonus content included. Ordinarily, that would be included in other books, but in this case, it would get its own book with all of this wonderful special art attached. Basically, if you want to see things get even better, now is a good time to push it.
Yeah, the Generous Back Edition is such a good stretch goal.
I highly
encourage people to get into that if you want to see some of your ideas put into Fellowship.
Remember that lovely The Rain that I mentioned earlier from Invels? That was originally created by a backer for Inverse World way, way back. And you can create something just as colorful and just as weird if you so choose.
And in the end, if you want to create a fan book for Fellowship, that's still, in the lines. Just, if you want to back it, it'll be official. No one will help you bring that to canon status, basically.
Yep. I don't know how to wrap this. How do we wrap this?
We don't! We talk about Fellowship and how much we love about it for the next 2 hours.
And then we come back to this about 2 months later, and we realize that we need to move on. I need to play more of this game.
I do too.
To play more of this game.
I told Gnome, I told my group we need to record more. We need to get back, because especially because To Winter Sand has recently resumed. It's so good.
But for now, I guess this is it for this episode of Adventure Buds. It's a short one this time, in meaning that we don't have a second part coming. But don't worry, there is plenty more to come after this.
You call this short? I edit files down to nearly an hour. This is still pretty long.
Hon.
Yes. Yes.
We did 4 books of Dungeon World, and the next thing we're going to be doing 6.
Oh, God. I am now... Oh, no.
I told you.
Oh, no.
This is the short one.
Look at the podcasting, baby.
Night, everyone.
Good night.